focus here in terms of how Mahajan plays out. And just to get our key points out of the table, that basically the Gemara tells us that we have a basic level of Ner Chanukah, that is Ner Yishebeso. We're only obligated to light one candle no matter what night, no matter how many people live in the household. If we want to be extra special, we want to be Mahader, so then we should light per person. But again, still nothing correlating to nights. And if we want to be really special, HaMahadrin, Min HaMahadrin, so that's where we get into nights. And the view of Beis Hillel that we go up, we do 1, 2, 3, 8. And the view of Beis Shammai that we go down, starting with 8, going down. And the Gemara giving two explanations that either you want to count the days left, that's Beis Shammai's view, or the days that have been, that's Beis Hillel's view. Or Milan Bakodesh being Maridin for Beis Hillel, we want to always go up with matters of Kedusha. And Beis Shammai believes it parallels the Karbanos on Sukkos, where we go in descending order. But we saw that there was a major machlokas among the Rishonim, that the Tosfos quotes the Ri, that if you want to do per night, if you want to do the highest level, then you skip the second level, you skip per person. Because if you're going to combine the two, if you're going to have 12 candles when you have four people in the household on the third night of Chanukah, 12 is not going to be a meaningful number. No one's going to know, is it 4 times 3, 6 times 2, 3 times 4, etc., etc. And because we want Heker, we want to be able to recognize what's going on, says Tosfos, you only do per night if that's what you're doing, and you don't do per person. But the Rambam disagreed, apparently maintaining that we don't worry so much about that. We don't worry about Heker. We're not so concerned that we should be able to perceive what's going on. And that's not an issue so much. So we started to discuss yesterday a position that the Achronim in general take towards this Machlokas, that maybe it has to do with the question of, is the Hiddur of Chanukah an extension of the general idea of Hiddur Mitzvah that we find Makola Torah Kula, Zeke Levi Andehu? Or is it something that is unique to Chanukah? Not connected to Zeke Levi Andehu. It's not like the Hiddur Mitzvah of an Esrog or a Sefer Torah. It's something unique to Chanukah. And it has its own rules. And we saw that Rav Yaakov Bezalel Zsolti, great Machaber of the Sefer of Mishnas Yavetz, former chief rabbi of Jerusalem, had suggested that that was the machlokas between Tosfos and the Rambam, that Tosfos believes this is a standard Kol HaTorah Kula type of Hiddur, and therefore we care that it should be recognizable, because many Rishonim maintain that Hiddur Mitzvah in the general sense is only valuable if it's something you can see. If you can't see it, like the parshiyos of tefillin that are hidden away in the box, then there's no point in hiddur. So the Tosfos that cares so much about hiddur is interested in seeing it as part of this whole package. While the Rambam, who says differently, the Rambam who doesn't seem to care about Heker, it's because he sees this as a unique hiddur, different from the rest of the Torah, that's built into the mitzvah of Chanukah itself, and we don't have to worry about whether or not you can figure out what's going on. And to prove his point, he noted that Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch both say that you should go begging for Ner of Chanukah, it's such a big deal. But the Shulchan Aruch probably maintains, as he's interpreted by later Sfarim, that you only have to go begging for one candle, because the rest are a hiddur, it's kind of an add-on. Why should you go begging for an add-on? While the Rambam, his language seems to say that you would go begging for the whole thing. So he wanted to use that to prove that the hiddur of Chanukah, according to the Rambam, is not an add-on, is not something external, but goes to the mitzvah itself and becomes a part of the mitzvah itself. So if you're going to beg for Ner Chanukah, you'll beg for the extra candles too. Okay, those are, I think, just are the key points from yesterday, just to get us to where we're up to today. Everybody more or less up to speed? Does that make sense? Okay. So we indicated yesterday that we would want to suggest an interpretation that's different. And that's a little bit the opposite of what the Zsolti Zecher Tzadik Levracha wrote, and that maybe we'll use a similar principle to go in the other direction. I think first, we have to raise the following issue. That to say that Tosfos holds this is a standard hiddur, and the Rambam holds it special, is first of all difficult for the following reason. But I think you have to say that everyone has to acknowledge that the hiddur of Hanukkah is unique. That Mahadran is different than hiddur mitzvah by Sefer Torah by Nesri. So yesterday, when I asked for some indications that that might be true, so we had some suggestions, the fact that there's more than one level, there's a Mahadran, a Mahadran, and a Mahadran, the point that it's about a number rather than about a general aesthetic sense, all of that kind of points to it being different. But as I kind of indicated, there's also an even more conclusive clue. There's something which really makes it a slam dunk point that this is not following the rules of hiddur that we find everywhere else. Anyone want to take a stab at it? If you recall, we learned last week that the general rule for hiddur mitzvah is that to add on to the expenses of the mitzvah, at least according to Rashi, and how much do you add on for a fancier mitzvah?
A shlish,
a third. So if you have an esrog that is kosher and it costs $30, for the better esrog, you'll spend either $10 or $15 more. How does that math work out in the context of time? It's totally blown away, right? Because if the ikar mitzvah is one candle per night per household, that means you're using eight candles throughout time, not counting shamash. Now, let's say you want to do the smallest degree of hiddur. You want to do ner l'kol echad v'echad. And let's say there are only two people in your household. How many candles are you using over the course of time?
16.
Already, you have doubled your expenditure. You're already way past shlish. Now, if you want to go per night, right, how many candles do you use per Hanukkah, per person over the course of Hanukkah? How many did they put in those blue boxes?
50?
Yeah, it's more than that, right? So you're going many, many times over. Right? And then per person, if you have five people in your household and 8 nights of Hanukkah, you're going to use many, 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 many times as many candles as you would if you were using just 8 candles over the course of Hanukkah. So the standard of adding on a shlish is completely obliterated in the context of Hanukkah. Some other sort of point out a similar point, a little bit of a different direction, that what's also odd is that, let's say you have 5 people in your house. Want to comment on the previous point?
Kind of. Yeah? That's not always true. Like, if we're going to the third to fourth night, you're only adding a quarter.
True. If you're only looking for a one-night scale.
So, the point every night is different, though.
Like, correct. But still, from the basic mitzvah over the course of Hanukkah, the increase is...
So you're wanting to cancel job types of hiddur.
Maybe you can, but that would be a unique kind of thing to be doing. But the normal approach of any kind of basic hiddur, even if it's a minimal hiddur, would still involve increasing the candles from the base mitzvah to an enormous degree. But the base mitzvah any night is one candle. So any night that you do any kind of a hiddur, you're increasing it at least 100%. Because any night, the eighth night, you could get away with one candle.
So it's always from the base, not from...
Presumably, yeah. But to kind of address your point a little bit, there are those who point out another quirk in this area, that let's say you want to go, like Tosfos, from level 1 to level 2 to level 3. So let's say there are 5 people in your house, and it's the second night of Hanukkah. So the base mitzvah is to light 1 candle, and the Mahadran is to light 5 candles. And the Mahadran, minimum Mahadran, is to light 2 candles. So to go up the level, you go down in expenditure. That's also unique. So I think any way you look at it, there are aspects of this Mahadran that simply will not be stuffed into the box of hiddur mitzvah of the rest of the Torah. You have to say that the Mahadran of Hanukkah is special in some fundamental way. I think you have to say that everyone agrees to that. So that being said, if we say that Tosfos and the Rambam will have to acknowledge that the Mahadran of Chanukah is special, so what is the Machlokas about?
I think the Machlokas is about the following. They both agree that the Mahadran is special. It's not a normal hiddur. However, the question is as follows. Even though it clearly has different rules to it, is it still a normal type of hiddur mitzvah with unique rules? Or is it a completely different concept that has nothing at all to do with hiddur mitzvah in general? No connection whatsoever. So within that question, I think here's where it's the reverse of what Rav Zsolti said. I think the Rambam is more standard, while Tosfos is the one who is advancing a completely unique model of hiddur mitzvah. Because according to Tosfos, we care that you should be able to count candles and read a message into what's going on. No other hiddur mitzvah, and I think maybe the Frying to maybe its point yesterday, no other mitzvah has something like that, where it's not just about nicer, but it's about having a message. It's like saying, imagine if hiddur mitzvah on Sukkot means that hiddur is have a nicer, beautiful esrog, and mahadran, min mahadran, have an esrog that pops up in the air and dances and sends out smoke signals that says happy Sukkot. And if all of a sudden you have to read a message into it. So that's completely unprecedented. Where else do you find that as a hiddur mitzvah? So Tosfos' focus on that is something unique. It's something which separates it completely from any other hiddur mitzvah. Now the Rambam, who doesn't focus on that, I think it's important to clarify, I don't think it's exactly what Rav Zsolti was saying, Mechilas Kavoto, that it's not similar to the machlokas by hiddur mitzvah if it applies to something that's not visible. Because neither the Rambam or Tosfos is talking about a hiddur that's invisible. No one's talking about lighting in a closet. They're both talking about a hiddur that's visible. The question is, should it be understandable? According to everyone, the hiddur will be something people will see. But Tosfos wants you to be able to read the code, and the Rambam doesn't seem to care if you can read the code or not. So that's a fundamental difference. So basically, according to the Rambam, if he doesn't care so much if you can read the code, so what's the hiddur according to the Rambam? So you could say that the hiddur is to have a bigger presentation, to have a bigger flame. In other words, the Rambam's hiddur is not so different from an esrog. Just like a bigger esrog is more mahudr, so too a bigger presentation is more mahudr for Neres Chanukah. While Tosfos is giving you this radically different type of concept. So maybe that's the machlokas, that Tosfos holds this is something totally unique. While the Rambam maintains that basically this is a standard hiddur with unique rules. So what about the unique rules? Right? What about the fact that we said a second ago that everyone has to agree that there is something different about Mahadran of Chanukah and the hiddurim of the rest of the Torah? And what about the proof that Rav Zsolti brought from the Rambam that you have to go begging for a hiddur, if that's really his position? So I think the nature of all those exceptions, the exceptions that we have to agree to, those exceptions are not about the format of the mitzvah, but they're about the commitment to the mitzvah. That everyone agrees that Chanukah, the hiddur, is more important than it is by any other mitzvah. And that we're more committed to it. So if the Rambam does indeed believe that you have to go begging for a hiddur, that doesn't necessarily tell us that the mitzvah is fundamentally different. it tells us that when it comes to Hanukkah, there's a greater pressure. Any other mitzvah you consider a hiddur to be optional, and for Hanukkah will tell you to really make a greater effort. So too, the idea of extending yourself more than a shlish, of spending more than this extra third, that's not necessarily a difference in the mitzvah itself. That's a difference in how far you have to push yourself, in your commitment to the hiddur. So if that is agreed upon by everyone, so you could say that everyone agrees that Hanukkah has a unique relationship to hiddur. The question is, how does it manifest itself? According to Tosis, you have to have a whole new concept of Mahadrim, which is completely distinct to Hanukkah, not the same as anything else. And according to the Rambam, a normal concept of hiddur is there, that there should be a bigger presentation rather than a smaller presentation. But the commitment that you have, the focus you have to put on the hiddur, is stronger than it is by any other means. But the nature is similar. Does that make sense? Any questions about that? Yes, Michael.
According to Tosso, you think that the two levels would be reversed, that maybe Mahadrim and Mahadrim.
So it's interesting. I have to try to figure out what drives each level. It's a fair question to ask, and we will hopefully come back to that point in a little bit. But so this is indeed the case. And so this is an interesting point. So there's a lot to say about this. Some of it is actually a little bit more about the Tamei HaMitzvos than about the details. So we'll see how much we can finish today in our short slot. We'll have to fill in some of the details tomorrow. But one question that could be raised is, first of all, the Vilna Gaon has a comment along these lines. The Vilna Gaon, in his commentary to the Shulchan Aruch, so he notes that you could say that the two different explanations given in the Gemara to the Machlokes B'Tzilul Beishama is maybe relevant to this question. Right? If you recall, so Beishama goes down, Beishilul goes up, and one track is Beis Hillel goes up because Milo Mekadosh Bein Maridin, and Beis Shammai goes down because of Parei Achav, or Beis Hillel goes up because we're counting the days that have been so far, and Beis Shammai goes down because we're counting the days left. Says the Vilna Gaon, there's a difference lahalacha between the two reasons. And that difference might be Tosfos and the Rambam. Because according to the idea that it's about counting days, whether it's future days or past days, so then the number becomes important. We have to get the exact number in order to count days. So Tosfos, who cares about Heker, is aligned with that position in the Gemara, that's the explanation. The days that have been or the days that are yet to come, either one, but we're counting days. The other track in the Gemara, that it's about Sukkos Korbanos and Malam Bekodesh, so that doesn't focus on specific number of days. That's just about a direction. Do it go down or do it go up? So says the Gra, that could be the other position. The position that doesn't worry so much about measure is about the notion that it's the other explanation, that it's about going up or going down, but not so much about the number. Now, I can have the Gemara in front of me, if you remember, so that next line of the Gemara is that there's a story about the two Zakenim who each one did a different approach, like Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. So we asked yesterday, what's the point of the story? Why does the Gemara tell us that? And I think Ephraim pointed out, which is consistent with the Ritzvah, that the stories there tell us that Beis Shammai might still be a viable option. Maybe it's not refuted. That could be true. But the Gra also points out that the Rif quotes this as a halacha l'maisa point. That maybe you make the point that between the two explanations of Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, this is the explanation that wins. Ma'al Mekodesh being a reason / Parei Hachav. So what's the nafka mina of which explanation wins? So the Gra just told us the nafka mina. Do we care so much about the numbers per se? Or do we care about just the general direction? So that we could ponder for a second, so maybe we'll have to figure out how to best use our limited time today. It has been suggested by some, and it makes a lot of sense, that maybe the machlokus, if this is indeed the kind of question that's going on between Tosos and the Rambam, maybe the question is, what exactly is the nace of Hanukkah that we're commemorating? Now, as we know, there are at least two major nisim of Hanukkah that we could focus on. And the Gemara on our daf, it's kind of backwards, but the Gemara eventually on our daf, Gemara Omer, is going to say, oh, by the way, my Hanukkah, what's Hanukkah? And tell us the whole story of what happened. So when we celebrate Hanukkah and we make a whole presentation, what are we celebrating? What are we commemorating? And so what are the two candidates? Sorry? Yeah, so on one hand it could be the oil. That's the one that the kids focus on most, gets the most attention sometimes about the oil lasting for 8 days. But there's another candidate. It could be that maybe what we're really celebrating is the base of the Mulchama, the fact that we had the military victory. There's a major raya, by the way, Lahalacha, that's the bigger deal. What might I be thinking of?
Halal.
Well, halal, why does that prove it? You're close.
It was a for us.
But it definitely was a nace, right? So we say halal on nace. We know there certainly
was a Yeshua, though. That's why we say halal, no?
See, halal is based on Yeshua's davka, that's the idea? Could be, but I'm looking for something a little more specific. Michael?
Al-Nisim,
right? Al-Nisim, one should assume, and we'll talk about Al-Nisim, it's also a sugya here, but Al-Nisim is probably very significant. You know, we spent some time a few weeks ago being medayik in the language of Hanero Salalu, which is also significant. But Al-Nisim is a very important text because our major expression on Hanukkah in words of our gratitude to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Al-Nisim. Because Hallel, the reason I wasn't so excited focusing on Hallel is the same Hallel we say every other day. Every other day we say Hallel. So there's nothing in Hallel that characterizes what we're talking about. But Al-Hanisim is where we actually express what we're thankful for. So what do we say about the nace of the oil in Al-Hanisim? What language do we use referring to that?
Muhammad.
Exactly, absolutely nothing. Right? There's nothing in Al-Hanisim about the oil lasting 8 days. The entire Nusach is about the Mochama. So that is a compelling point. And also logically it's compelling that we should focus more on the Mochama. Why? Because a nes has to be significant for us to celebrate it. And as flashy and attention getting as the oil nes was, it's the Mulchama that really mattered. Right? If we lost the Mulchama, we'd be in big trouble. Nowadays, so many centuries later, we celebrate the Mulchama because that's what makes a difference to us today. So there are a couple of reasons to assume that the Mulchama is really what it's all about. And if that's the case, so then it will come out that Hecker is less important. And perhaps that's the Rambam's view, that Hecker might be a little bit less important, and maybe that's what the Gros is saying by focusing specifically on that interpretation rather than the interpretation of counting the days coming and the days going. I saw one sefer that raised the point that if that's really the focus, that other theme, so then why did Chazal at all make it about going up and going down? Why didn't they just make a takana that every night of Hanukkah you should light the same amount of candles? What's the idea of going in any direction? So it might be, the Sefer suggests, the Sefer called Birkas Mo'adecha, that Chazal wanted that every day of Hanukkah should be distinct. It should have its own character. So like we saw by Sukkot yesterday, that the idea of having different korbanos every day gives it its own independent yontif status. We say halal fully every day on Sukkot because of that. So that's a way of calling attention to each day on its own. So maybe that was what Chazal wanted to do with Hanukkah also, And then it's just a question up or down, and that's what this other machlokus is about. Fine?
Zal did do that.
Did do what?
One candle every night.
Ah, so that could also be true, right? That's a good point as well. That maybe that's why, on the core level, Ner Yishubeso means that really that's all it's about. And that, which is also something we'll have to address, that maybe if you want to say it like that, you're saying, so Ner Yishubeso, all Chazal really care about is you have one candle. Because the main thing is the Mulchama. That's the real mitzvah of Chanukah. You should have a candle in your wall to advertise the Mulchama. Correct. And that, then what does Mahadran mean? Still the same thing, right? Just still per person that everyone should do it themselves. And what does Mahadran, Minha Mahadran mean? What is this extra level? Then bring in this extra nace about the oil. But on a base level, it's not about the oil. On a base level, it's about the Mulchama, perhaps. Well put. So there is, just to focus a little bit on the Tamei HaMitzvahs in the context of this halachic discussion, but there is a very important word of the Maharal, which you'll have opportunities over Chanukah, I'm sure, to say over in various contexts, so it's a nice idea to share, that the Maharal understood that really, again, for the reasons that we just said in the past few minutes, the nes of the Mulchama is really what Chanukah is about. That's really what's important. That's the one we talk about in Nahal HaNisim. That's the one that's relevant to us today, all these centuries later. But there's a problem. It was incomplete. That after the war was over, so there is a possibility that the attitude could have been Kochi v'Otzem Yodi, that we had a great military, they were outmatched, but they were smarter and they were craftier, and they were able to overcome the great odds against them. We just had a wonderful army. So it's possible to miss the point that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is behind the whole thing. So says the Maharal, that's why we have the nes of the oil. It's not really significant in terms of overall path of history, but it was, so to speak, it was God's signature. It was God's way of saying, here's the important nes that you were saved from the Mulchama. But in case you forget who did this nace, in case you disconnect from what made it happen, that's what the nace of the oil was there to show. Here's something which is objectively miraculous, it was physically impossible. That's God's signature to show he was the one running the show the whole time. So the Maharal understands these two nisim as complementing each other. The real nace is the Mulchama, but the nace of the Pach HaShemen is there in order to emphasize that it was God's doing. So that could affect, again, what exactly we're commemorating. And again, so maybe the basic mitzvah is to have one candle, and the Mahadran is to acknowledge also this extra signature. And just to say another point, so I guess tomorrow we'll have to focus on some of the significant halachic implications, and there's some very significant halachic implications of this debate. So we'll flesh those out tomorrow. But we'll mention a little bit more about the timing here. So if everyone agrees that the Hiddur plays a bigger role in Hanukkah than it does in other mitzvot, just the argument about how it does that, so why should that be? Why should it be that Hanukkah is different from all the other mitzvot in the Torah in requiring more attention to Hiddur? So there are many different ways to address this, but one could say that Hiddur plays an unusual role in terms of the nes itself, in terms of the history itself. And there are many different roads to take you to this conclusion, but just to mention one, and we talked about this a little bit in the Kavsa Zakra Kvasugya, that there is a whole question the Acharonim asked, that the whole nes of the Pach HaShemen was halachically unnecessary. So we said a minute ago that it's less significant than the war in terms of impacting on our lives centuries later. But it wasn't even that significant then. Because we have a principle, it's either a good question or not, depending on how you understand it, but in any event, there is a principle of Tumo Hutchuv Tzibur. I spoke about this in the Kavsa Zakra Club discussion. That if you need something for the purposes of the Tzibur, and it's Tameh, you're allowed to use something Tameh if that's the only alternative for the whole Tzibur. So according to that, you don't need tar oil. So the whole miracle that allowed us to have oil that was tar that lasted 8 days is not halachically necessary. So there are many approaches that recommend reading Rav Zevin's classic work, Mo'adim B'Halacha, who goes through them. And one approach, which seems very not razzle-dazzle, not the most lumpish approach, is that, yeah, you're right, you didn't really need tar oil. But it's nicer. To have tar oil would be nicer than to use tamei oil. So if that's true, it means the whole mace, the whole miracle of Hanukkah, at least this component of it, is about pursuing hidden. So for that reason, perhaps, Hanukkah reflects Hiddur in an additional way that's not present by other mitzvahs. Now there are other, like I said, there are other routes to get there. There are other ways that Sfarim point out that Hiddur plays an unusual role in the history here. For example, the Beis HaLevi, again in those comments about Hanukkah that he has in the Sefer Al HaTorah. So the Beis HaLevi says that there's no minimum shear of a wick. The wick doesn't have any minimum thickness. So if they didn't have enough oil, what they could have done was they could have made very thin wicks, and that would use less oil, and that would last longer. So why didn't they just do that? Why didn't they just make very thin wicks to stretch the oil out for more time? So the suggestion is that that's not so mahuter. It's not going to have a very nice flame. So again, the notion that they had to hold out for tahar oil or for more oil is driven by a concern for hidden. Or the Rabbi says that the oil that they were getting was farther away because that was the better and more mahuzer oil, and that was where you had an 8-day journey. And if they didn't want such mahuzer oil, they could have gotten closer. They wouldn't have had to travel so many days in order to get the right oil. So there are a lot of different roads to this idea, but the notion seems to be that Hanukkah, the Nes of the Pach HaShemen, was built on a concern for Hiddur. I want to suggest once again, I'll be Derek HaDrush, while I'm here in the center of this whole halakhic debate, that maybe also the notion is that, especially for those of us who are in university, where we study secular studies, so you may ask, so then what's the difference? Aren't we all Hellenists? What's the difference between the context of Hanukkah, where we were fighting off the Hellenist influence, and we were fighting off all of the secular studies, so to speak? So what's the difference between them and us? So presumably, the difference is, hopefully the difference is, not so much the study of arts and sciences itself, but the recognition that that doesn't come in a vacuum, but that comes from a Kaddish Baruch Hu too. And that's what makes all the difference. That's what makes us not into Hellenists. So the notion of Hiddur, the idea of Hiddur, that you go beyond what works, it means that the world is not simply a machine. That your car is a machine, you put the key into the engine, you turn it on, and it goes. So there's no inyan of doing it behidur. It either works or it doesn't work. Either the engine will start or it doesn't. There's no inyan of Hiddur. Hiddur only makes a difference if somebody's watching. If there's somebody paying attention, then you want to do something in a way that shows extra effort and extra beauty. So the announcement that you want to live a life of the Hiddur, not just what works, but the Hiddur mitzvah, that's an announcement that you don't think the world is just a machine that functions on its own, and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was watching, is paying attention. And maybe on some level, that's what all of Hanukkah is about in terms of the Hellenistic influence. So all of that, again, is a little bit drush, but it all connects to this idea that Hiddur plays a unique role by Hanukkah, and that maybe the nace of Hanukkah is based on Hiddur, and that manifests itself in our attitude towards the mitzvah. So that's all Api Tamei HaMitzvah. So basically, just to quickly review, before we run out of time, so what did we say? So we suggested that maybe we see, for the reasons that we just mentioned in terms of drush, but also in terms of halacha, the fact that any level of hiddur is going to cost us a lot more money, far more than a third, shows us that the hiddur mitzvah of Hanukkah is unique. It's not like a hiddur of Kol Torah Kulo, And therefore, maybe the shiloh, the machlokus between Tosfos and the Rambam, is it unique completely with no connection at all to other Hebrew mitzvahs? Or is it the same type of idea, but with a greater commitment, such as therefore we spend more money and we go begging if we have to make sure we do it, but once we do it, it's essentially the same. And the suggestion was, in a different direction than Rizalti, that perhaps the Rambam really has a more standard kind of hiddur mitzvah, that it's about having a bigger presentation, and Tosfos, by focusing on hacker, has a unique idea that you have to actually read the message, and that could be their machlokas, and the Vilna Gaon had suggested that that was also the machlokas between the two tracks in the Gemara. Are we counting days, or are we simply going up and going down? And that's perhaps the issue. So this, again, will impact many, many major halachic issues in a practical sense in terms of how this mitzvah is fulfilled. So God willing, tomorrow we'll pick up with that and we'll do some ideas about that.